You with us, Robert?
This is Jay.
Hi, Jay. I'm looking for Robert.
He called me and gave me this number, so I'm sure he's going to be on.
I know he's here.
I'm here, but I guess you're not hearing my sound check.
Yeah, we're hearing you, Robert.
Yeah, but I'm on my cell phone. Let's just get Skype fixed. Hold on.
Do you need me to play another song, or are you ready to go?
How about that? Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now, Robert.
Oh, I had my slide mute button on my headset. I apologize, everyone. Well, I started saying it before. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Roundtable number 31, February 9th, 2012. I'm your host, Robert Zuluaga, and Janine Stewart is our moderator. I mean our producer. You could be a moderator too, Janine. I was saying this is an exciting time. Very, very exciting things are happening all around the Republic. We just had a really exciting seminar here in Phoenix with Fred and Nina Gutierrez and Kelby Smith. Just really exciting victories and successes happening on that front. We have some other exciting things happening, which you'll hear about today. So as we get started, we're going to have, as you know, we're changing the format a bit, so we're going to have a short 5-minute reports from various folks, and then we're going to go into a question and answer time. So as we get started here, I would like to invite Sharon Carr, who I saw on the board here somewhere. There you are. I'd like to invite you, Sharon, to open us in a word of prayer.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Sharon. Welcome to
Thank
the call,
you.
And guide us to the in a moment of prayer, if you will.
I sure will. Thank you for inviting me to pray. Father God, Abba, we come to you tonight with our hearts full of love and thanksgiving and praise towards you. Lord, you are worthy to be praised. And we offer to you tonight all of our praise and all of our thanksgiving. Lord, just be with us on this call tonight. Lead us and guide us. May everything that's said and done be according to your will, and be with us as we go through the rest of this week and this weekend as we have our meetings, Lord, that we will go to you in prayer and ask for your Holy Spirit's leading and guiding, and we will listen to that, the thunder and the small, still voice that you speak to us with, and that we will do what it is that you want us to do in the Republic, in our church, and also in our lives, Lord. Thank you for your blessings, your unmerited and undeserved favor that you give us every day, and bless this call tonight. In Jesus' precious and holy name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Sharon.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, this week, just amazing things have been happening, and I'll just share a couple of them with you. We did have training here, advanced training for the EFT process, which is it's an adjunct to the Republic. It's not endorsed, as far as I understand, by the Republic, but the successes and the victories are unquestionable. So we had a training to, you know, court, for going into court, etc. And I had a personal status hearing in a court case that I'm involved in. And so it was just wonderful to see forming us in putting a wedge into the court system, helping, at least I can speak for myself, helping me see how the system works better. The butterflies are going away, recognizing the power that we have and the strength we have. As we know who we are, firstly in Christ, and secondly as Americans who are free from the yoke of the trickery of the de facto. So going to court, and there's the whole parade, and the first series of folks who go before the court are all dismissed or dealt with in 2 or 3 minutes, and you know, between the attorneys and the judge. And so I have two other fellow members in the Republic with me. My wife's there. We go into court, and I'm in front of this judge. My wife and I are in front of this judge for almost an hour. And I was surprised by the process, very surprised by the process, because once we all finished, the counsel took us to the side and said, "You don't know this, but the judge pushed the button, the red button, and brought in the marshals." I had zero idea that speaking to the judge in a passionate manner would elicit him to push his famous red button. So it was very, very interesting how the pieces unfolded. And I've just watched, and I can only speak in my own life, but I've watched how God is guiding us and guiding me and others who I'm dealing with to solutions, to remedies, to meet with other people, to meet now we have some who are seasoned in the law and who understand the law, and doing battle and matching wits with these guys, and it's just really exciting to see. So anyway, having said that, our first guest is going to be, I heard him speak up earlier on the call, Jay Jones. Chief Justice Jay Jones is working with the president on the land patents. Once again, this is not something which is officially endorsed by the Republic as yet. It's something that is an adjunct to what we're doing. But once again, very exciting developments. So, Jay, I'm going to open the floor to you and let you share what you've got going.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi, Jay.
How are you? I was switching back between two calls, and I apologize for that. But, Robert, I did not hear what you said, but I know what we talked about today. So I just want to share a little bit about the land patent process and where we are. First of all, I want to thank Tom Chapman and Sharon Izzaldi and Kathy Suskovich and Gary Shahan and Rick and Gene and just everybody that's helped on this program putting it together. We have Michael Bishop and the governor of Florida has been just a great tool in putting a program together that's going to, like a mail merge program now, where you fill out one document and you'll have all the documents filled out. So now that that's going, I think the bank accounts are open where we can actually receive money, and the office is open where the processors can get their certificate numbers, and then now we can get control numbers. Everything's in place, so for anybody that's actually been waiting for that to happen, you can go ahead on out and start getting your clients, and we'll be setting up more seminars throughout America. Just if you want a seminar in your area, the best thing to do right now would be to email Kathy at DominionServicesRegistry@yahoo.com. That's DominionServicesRegistry@yahoo.com, and let her know that you're interested in having a seminar in your area, and then we'll get one of the closest trainers to that to go and hold that seminar.
Jay, I wonder if you could just take a minute and back up and just assume that a lot of the folks on the Republic Roundtable call don't know exactly what's involved in the land patent. Can you give a thumbnail sketch? Can you give an overview so that it gives folks a bit of a taste of what to expect with this process?
Okay, I can do that, Rob. I appreciate that. Land patents is the way that land used to be conveyed. It was always from a sovereign to a sovereign. A corporation cannot own land, and our government, through means of consent, without our consent basically, has taken over all the land in America. According to our Constitution, a lot of the people, you had to own land to vote, and a lot of the officials had to own a certain amount of acres before they could even be an official. So we have a real issue here with the original Constitution and being landowners. But we also have the privilege of being able to take that property back. And that's the purpose of the land patent. You go back to your original land patent or your original land grant. You bring that forward, and you accept your deed to your property, and we attach a land grant to that, which is the highest form of ownership. And if you actually own your property, it's with a land grant, it becomes immune to collateral attack. In other words, no one can come against your property. No one can really tell you what to do with your property. And that's the way it was meant to be. God gave us dominion over this earth, and he told us to subdue it and have dominion over the fish and the fowls and everything. And, of course, now the government has dominion over that. We have to buy a license to fish and a license to hunt. And we're really basically the only creatures on the planet that pay to live here, and we are the ones that should be living free. So we've got a lot of turning around to do, a lot of changes to make, but slowly we can do this, especially through the land patent process. It's now the process will cost is $580, and that is for the people to actually obtain their land patent and have it recorded in the Republic Records Bureau. And what happens is every time we take a piece of property away from, if you get your land grant and your land patent, you can have your piece of property pulled out of your county tax base, and you won't have to pay taxes anymore. So every time we pull a piece of property out of the county tax base, we're really, I'll say it this way, you know, bringing the de facto down a little bit and building the republic up. And that's the whole purpose of this program, is to take back our land, just take it back and actually be landowners again. I don't know if that explains it well enough, but...
Well, it does, except for one little piece that, I mean, I'm sure that that's what the whole reason you have the seminars is, to help folks get a real good handle on it. But just how is it that you have the authority, and you've worked out to have the authority to take it away from the de facto out of the county records and not have them come after you in the law or in through a legal process or some other ordinance?
Well, Land patents have been going on long before we re-inhabited this republic. Like one of the Supreme Court justices, Bob Schaefer in California, I believe he said he had 12 pieces of property that he actually has it to where the sheriffs won't even come on that property. And that's because he is the owner. Now, you know, when you say they won't come after you, that's a whole different story. But the process is lawful. And when you do that, you know, they're going to, even if you take it out of the county tax base, they're probably going to send you a tax notice next year. But because you did do it lawfully, then we just, we have another form we fill out that is a notice of error of that tax bill, and says that, you know, on such and such a date, we actually pulled that piece of property out of the county tax base. So, you know, It's not going to be like they're going to say, well, okay, here's your property. But the way it is done is all lawful, and all the paperwork is there in the process. And we just have to, you know, stand up and take our property back, and just not let these people continue to intimidate us and control us in that way. It's our property, and I say this, and I know it sounds a little bit, you know, silly, but it really drives a point home. Who did Adam buy land from? And who did the people in the Bible buy their land from? They didn't. It was given to them by God. And the only thing that changed that process was our government. And so it was always conveyed through a patent or deed or will, you know, so we just have to go back and undo and change the way that the land is conveyed now, and we can do that by going back to our original land grants. Some states, the original 13 colonies, are having a little harder time finding their grants, but a lot of the states, you can just go to what they call the Bureau of Land Management and ask for it, and they have it, and they'll give it to you. So,
Jay, this is Janine.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that the seminars are for the processor, to train the processors on how to fill out this paperwork. People can come to them and do the process for themselves, but and that's where they get a control number. Means that they've gone through the class and learned how to do it right. But there's a processor agreement. We want to make sure that this does not get changed up by people. It's not going to go on the internet. You're not going to be able to download the forms unless you are a certified processor that has gone through one of our courses. So I just don't want people to think that this is a seminar just for learning how to do your own land patent. It's learning how to become a processor for other people.
That's correct. The seminars that we talk about are to actually train people to go out here that could actually open their own business and do this for people. And you know, we want to do it for people that's only in the Republic. However, I see it as a great tool to recruit, because if someone wants to gain their land back and take property, all they have to do is join the Republic. So then you can actually do that process for them. But now, these seminars that Janine just mentioned are for people who want to take the class to become processors. And then you'll be doing the process for other people. And the actual seminars are $499. And those will be set up all through. I think President Turner's got a couple more set up for himself. And then there's five or six trainers throughout the nation that will be going around and doing the seminars for the processors.
Well, very good. From hearing what you're saying and knowing what Fred and Nina are doing and Kelby's about, I see an exciting coming together of some of these processes. So I'm excited to hear more about it, and I'm hoping we'll hear from Rick Weiner from the Republic Records Bureau to hear what the developments are there in terms of the recording and the pieces of how that kind of fits in and just where it'll actually interface in with what we're doing officially in the Republic. So, Jay, thank you so much. That's absolutely exciting. And your next workshop is where, or the next president's next workshop in which state, which city?
I'm not sure. So I'm sure Janine or Rick can give that information, but it's I think there's one in Chicago, isn't it, Janine?
Yes, there's one in Chicago on the 10th and 11th, and I don't believe we've posted it yet, but there is going to be one in L.A. That'll be the last one that the president does. And then after that, Jay, that's the handful of us that have agreed to go and travel in our areas and give this seminar after that.
Right. So just if you want a seminar in your area, just contact Kathy Suskovich at Dominion Services Registry at yahoo.com, and we'll take it from there.
Awesome.
But, it's such an exciting time that we're living in, because these are the changes that people sit around tables every day and say, we need to do something. But now we have something we can literally do and physically do and lawfully do. So we're taking back America one piece at a time.
I love it. Thank you, Jay. Thank you so much for being on the call. And we look forward to more progress in that.
Thank you so much.
Our next guest is out of the Senate. We have Jeff Smith. And, Jeff, I understand you have just a lot to share with us tonight. I haven't had the opportunity of talking with you. So good evening, Senator. You have the floor.
Well, thank you very much. We have actually been working quite a lot in the Senate. We have a number of things that have come about. We have passed the Flag and the Seal Act, actually separately. The flag first, and that took a number. Well, actually, we haven't passed the Seal Act. I apologize. It's very close. We have been working for about a month or so on the Flag Act. We finally got that passed. Forever Glory is now our flag. I don't know if anyone has seen it. It is on Republic Congress site. We're actually looking into making a purchase of some of those so we can have them around and show them off, and so that will be coming up very shortly, and that's pretty exciting. The other thing is the SEAL Act, which is sort of in conjunction with that, in as much as every country must have a flag and, of course, must have a seal. And so we have had several debates over the last couple of weeks over the seal. We've had a team of folks that have been working very diligently on that. Actually, same team was on the flag and the seal, and very thorough in their research and what have you. It's been sort of exciting to hear some of the suggestions that they've had over the last couple of weeks. The seal actually came out. It was going to be a single-sided event because in today's world, we do not seal things the same way they did years ago. Of course, they used wax seals, and they were double-sided at the time. And we were not going to have a double-sided. We were going to have a single-sided, but several folks from both houses had some extremely good suggestions. And so we've decided to add the second side to make it more of a commemorative type thing too. And I expect once we have that one done, we should probably have some of those that would be although I don't know, maybe that one you have to have within the folks that are actually going to use it as a seal. I know the notary people and things like that will be using the seal. So those are two big things that we've been working on for well over a month, and it's pretty exciting to see, as Jay was indicating, things coming together in a big way as we move closer down this road to our government being fully recognized worldwide. So that's sort of fun. The other thing we've been working on is an ASR, which is the replacement for the DSR. And, of course, it was the Declaration of Sovereign Intent. And, of course, they've changed that to the Affidavit of Sovereign Non-Intent. I apologize. That was the Utah thing. Help me out. The Declaration of Sovereign. What's the R stand for?
Rights.
Thank you very much. I had a brain freeze there for it. Oh, boy. And so they've been working on that quite a bit. That's been a rather tedious one because we're trying to make sure that everything is done very thoroughly in that document. In fact, last evening, I think there were probably 16 people working on it and spent several hours to cover one paragraph. And you know, we've had to do this a number of times over the last month or two. And I know we've taken several five-hour sessions just to get this document down right so that we have all the I's dotted, all the T's crossed to make it the document it should be. Those are the very exciting things that have occurred. We have had one sad note. We did have to have a reading this week in the Senate, and I don't know if you want me to read the whole thing, but we had a notice that we had to send out to the Senate from our Ethics Committee. I have redacted the names, but Robert, I don't know, do you want to take the time to read that?
What's the essence of it and how long is it? And if we can do it in a couple of minutes, I'm good with that.
I think it is posted. If you'd like, we can do that. But it is, it's not as happy an event. It is, the Senate had to deal with a couple of issues that came up. And I guess my only thought was relative to transparency. We wanted to try to make sure that we try to be above board in everything we do, even in the happy times and the sad times.
Well, go ahead. Lay it out there. Go ahead. Yeah.
This was a notice that was boy, our ethics committee had to present this, and so I will attempt to read it, and forgive me, it's Notice 2-7, 2012. By evidence presented, these are violations by senators, members, and other officials of the Republic. After reviewing the evidence from the Coffee Clutch recordings and the writings, our recommendation is as follows. Ethical violations. Some members of the Senate, along with other members of the Republic, conspiring to bring an agenda item to the floor, Senate floor, during roll call against the standing rules by an out-of-order method. This infraction occurred on 1-3-12, wherein senators requested that Texas individuals be returned to the Senate call. This strategy was previously agreed to before the January 3rd, 2012 Senate call. It was affirmed on the 9th of January Coffee Clutch call and was carried out by 6 senators. I will not read their names. 3 of those senators have since either resigned from their republic or were removed from office by their free state. Lawful and ethical means are available and could have been followed. The Ethics Committee recommends that these senators receive a written reprimand for this unethical behavior. Number 2. Conspiring to hinder the Republic from achieving a quorum of 34 states. The evidence shows that the overwhelming tone of these calls can be summarized by the opposing opinion of these participants regarding the direction of the House and Senate. They have attempted to prevent the quorum of 34 states to press their own agenda, even if it means slowing the quorum and the replacement of the pro tem and Speaker of the House. With varying degrees of participation, these individuals believe they are justified in their intentional strategic attempt to slow down the Republic. They have created a separate database stating that the Republic Records Bureau database should no longer be used by their group. In addition, on the Coffee Clutch call, the private Senate playback code was given out to non-senators and all other participants. These facts serve to strengthen the evidence against the participants. The national security issue involves members, officers of multiple branches of multiple free states. The magnitude and timing of this opposition, oppositional strategy is paramount. The evidence is being forwarded to the appropriate government bodies for lawful action. Senate Ethics Committee, page 2. Until this investigation is ended, it is recommendation of the Senate Ethics Committee that the senators involved with this national security issue receive the following sanctions. 1, suspension from all committee work. 2, voting rights suspended. 3, no recognition to speak on the floor of Senate. And again, I will not read any names. The senators who have participated in these calls that wish to clarify that their attendance and or comments do not reflect what is truly in the heart, their heart should send a letter of explanation to the Code of Ethics at Republic of the United States in an attempt to clarify and exonerate themselves. Additional findings may come in the future as new evidence is received. Current sanctions may be removed or additional actions may be taken. Any individual who believe they have firsthand knowledge or additional written or recorded evidence should contact Code of Ethics at republicoftheunitedstates.org. Respectfully submitted, Senate Ethics Committee. So we have lots of very good things happening in Senate, but we do have things that occur that are not as pleasant as we would like. So that I just wanted to share that as well.
Well, Jeff, if I could ask you here, just for folks who don't necessarily understand how the process works in the Senate, the Senate Ethics Committee consists of how many senators?
It has a number of members, about seven, I believe.
So seven members came to a finding of this. What is that then mean in terms of the body of the Senate? Do they then take that before the body? Does it then open discussion about the matter? Just explain the process of how this comes to be resolved.
Yeah, this was read before the whole body of Senate. There was a vote, and the indicated sanctions were put in place immediately. This particular investigation is ongoing, and so until it's completed, I really don't want to comment too much because I don't want to jeopardize their particular investigation.
But it's something that is done by not just a matter of seven people blackballing six people. You actually,
that's
it's
correct.
A process that is
that's correct. Like
through the
like
full
all
body.
Like all the work of both the House and Senate, most of the work happens in a committee. That committee then brings their either bill or act or resolution, or in this case, their findings before the entire Senate body. They present their findings and then a vote, and discussion and a vote one way or the other occurs, and we have either a law or a bill or an act or anything of that nature. So, yes, it would a number of them do the investigation, do all the background work, and then, of course, they respond to whatever the questions are. We've had that on the last several weeks on all of these things, the flag, the seal, the affidavits, all those things, when they come to the floor, get debated sometimes fairly heavily.
I understand that. Now, this is a little bit different than the flag or the seal act insofar as you're talking about colleagues in Congress and having the ability for them to also give their side of it, too. I'm suspecting in an open manner.
Before it's completed, they will respond, I'm sure. That is not what we did this week was present the facts that they have, and so they will, until it's completed, and it is not complete yet, will not be allowed to vote or participate on the floor. So it is not a finished product, Robert, at this point. So I can't tell you the whole, you know, beginning to end process because it is not done. And of course, this is the first time we've ever had to do something of this gravity, and certainly sadness for everyone, I believe. No one was at all thrilled to have to do something like this.
All right, Jeff, well, let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much for your report. If it's okay with you, we'll move over to the House. And I'd like to welcome the Speaker of the House, Mark Lounsbury. Speaker Lounsbury,
thank
good
you.
Evening.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to the Republic. The Congress is the legislative branch that is the voice of we the people, and by its very nature includes a lot of public discourse and debate and back and forth so that the will of the people is actually gotten in any process that we're participating in. So I think that this branch is a little different than the other branches. there's deliberation in the judiciary branch, there's execution and creating policy and moving out in the executive branch. But the legislative branch is a much slower branch. It's very deliberate and very time-consuming at times because it is an attempt to have the voice of the people heard. And so it's a very unique branch. And it's enjoyable, and it's also frustrating at times. But as long as you understand that that is the process, and that's part of the process, the debate and the discussion and the public discourse is all part of the process, then we can embrace that process and embrace the discourse and the debate and the discussion and do it civilly and come to a good result. And so that's what's been happening over the last many months, a couple of months in particular over some legislation that has been before the House and Senate. But even prior to that, lots of discussion and talks over the last over a year. And I'll just add a little bit to one of the things that Senator Smith discussed, which was the Affidavit of Sovereign Rights. And that is just part of an overall package that the Immigration, Education, and Naturalization Committee has been working on for a year now. And that process of understanding how is it that we're going to bring people into the Republic, acknowledging who they are, acknowledging who they're not, and out of not only their relationship with the corporation and understanding that, but also as it relates to people coming in from other countries. But the primary purpose initially was to deal with people coming into the Republic from all that are already in this country and in this nation. And so there's a lot of caveats, a lot of difficult things that we've had to deal with and understand related to what process would have to take place, what criterion is used for people coming into the Republic, how much disclosure is necessary, how much understanding would be necessary to change that jurisdiction into the Republic from the corporate venue. And what it all means. What does citizenship mean? We've had lots of discussion about the word citizen, citizenship, sovereign rights, and sovereignty. And obviously, there's an understanding that we've had to all come to because we are citizens. We are also sovereigns. Some would say it's an oxymoron that you're a sovereign citizen. But in some sense, we have to acknowledge both of those because the Constitution uses the word citizen. We are citizens of the de jure, even though there has been, the corporate structure has modified that in ways that causes us to lose some freedom and to be in the position of contract. Perhaps without knowing it, and in sort of a commercial relationship there with that commercial venture, which is the corporation, DC. And so all of those things are very, very interesting topics, and when you really get in to discuss them, start asking those questions, it's not as simple as we might think on the surface. And so that's why it's taken so much time. And I will say that these committees, especially if you go all the way back to the beginning, we have literally spent thousands of hours on this. And so I'm confident that when the dust settles, that the will of the people and the understanding of the people will prevail. And because we've just put a lot of due diligence and a lot of time into it, and we're just continuing to pray that insight and wisdom will be given. I'm thankful for all of the input that's come, not only from the House and the Senate, but also from other members of the Republic who are able to see the pending legislation as it gets tweaked and changed, and it's up on the RepublicCongress.org website under the public tab section. Everybody's able to go view that and then give input. Again, there's been a lot of changes to what's up there right now, and we're getting ready to probably post that this coming week. So if you go and look at it right now, just realize that there's a lot of changes and a lot of updates that have already been made that we haven't posted yet because we haven't finalized it and haven't gotten it all ready to post. But it will be probably prior to our next Congress meeting next Tuesday. So you can look forward to that. With that said, I'll yield to any questions that might be coming down the pike.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Speaker Lounsbury. Our next guest will be the Republic Records Bureau Secretary, Rick Weiner. Rick, good evening.
Hello, Robert. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Great. I just needed to report to everyone. The president is traveling, as most of you know. He's virtually started in the southeastern states and is moving up towards Chicago area. Tomorrow he is going to have a train the processor meeting where he's training the processors that Jay Jones was speaking of earlier, having to do with Dominion Services on that land patent system. He'll be there for the next couple of days taking care of that, and then we're going to put out the schedule on his next trip. We'll be out to the California area, just getting the information in this evening to post on where that meeting will be in California. It will be posted on the Freedom Yell website. That's freedomyell.com, I believe. Is it, Janine? Do you remember off the top
yes,
of your head?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Freedomyell.com.
So it would be www.freedom, the whole word freedom, and then yell, like yelling at your kids, YELL.com. And there's an area there where you can both sign up for it. When we get it posted on there, probably be in the next 24 hours that the California seminar will be put together. This will be the last seminar that the president will be putting together. He is planning and putting his trip together to where he can finalize the funding, and there'll be more news on that as it happens. The second thing the president asked me to bring to the people this evening is a little bit further information than what the Senate and the House talked about, having to do with the ASR, the Affidavit of Sovereign Rights. The president was able to get a draft form of that affidavit from the committees that are working on it because we had a couple of states that had a major problem. They had two governments in place. In other words, they had two governors and two sets of officials, and they didn't know what to do. And they asked for the president to come and settle this issue. Well, the president told them that he does not have the power to settle that issue. The only thing that he do is to come to those states in a open type question and answer assembly and answer any of the questions of any of the people and get a hold of the one Supreme Court justices if needed for any questions to be answered. And he spent many hours in one place. He spent two full days, 6 hours and 8 hours talking with the people, and they all had their questions and what they were doing, and the president was very firm that he does not have the power to remove a governor, as purported by many of those who feared that he was coming to do just that. He went and only gave the people the truth, and that he brought the ASR as a simple method for those people that were scattered because of the many resignations from the misinformation that they had and the distrust that they had, because now they've got, the poor people have got the usually polar opposite systems. A lot of misinformation has come out since that, and the president asked me to state that this ASR that the Congress is working on is not something that he believes that everybody has to sign right here, right now. People need to realize what it is. It's an affidavit. It complements the DSR. It does not remove anybody from the Republic. It simply complements their intent and goes along with their original DSR. If he's not asking, and I don't believe Congress is asking at this time, for everybody to sign that. He only brought it along as a method for those states that were in turmoil and conflict to be able to find the people that were clearly wanting to find the law form that we are standing on, that Congress put together, meaning the Holy Bible, the 1776 Declaration of Independence, the 1789 original Constitution of the United States, and the 1791 Bill of Rights that stops at the 10th Amendment. In other words, it was ratified, and it was only 10 amendments in 1791. This additional affidavit simply confirms and reaffirms the intent of those original DSRs. There has been a whole lot of what they call national states resignations put out by some of these other groups, a lot of that misinformation there. He simply answered all of the people's questions having to do with the Terry Hinkles and the nation states and the James Wright, and he was very clear and made sure that he stayed for, if it was up to 8 hours, to make sure that each and every individual in those states could ask their questions. He did that. And so he just wanted me to say that it just simply, this new ASR in those states that were in turmoil, it simply gave that state and us clearly a way to know who wanted to abide by our law form in the Republic due to these many resignations and the misinformation that the people were fed. Surprisingly, in two of the states that this is happening in, many of the people contacted us directly and wanted to submit their new ASR directly to National because they had some mistrust on the various officials. We, of course, took those in and immediately put them in the people's Dropbox. And we pray that they will utilize the Republic form of government to settle their differences. Oregon, so far, has been the only free state to have used the Republican form of government to act on a petition or a complaint to the one Supreme Court to redress grievances. It had to do with a governor, as you may know. And the opinion from the one Supreme Court was that initially, in an assembly meeting of the people voting, that was not a Republican form of government or a method to remove a governor. This caused the Oregon representatives to come together. They passed constitutional resolutions and set up a lawful removal process of a state official by proper vote of the people of Oregon, and cause them to no longer utilize a democracy or mobocracy method to remove anyone. From a standpoint of National, if any improprieties or unlawful removals of any officials in any state, any free state, is happening, we demand and pray that the people in that free state will file a lawful complaint to the appropriate court so that the Republican form of government will prevail in that free state and in all the free states. Georgia was the second free state to utilize this same petition complaint method. They, the people that had been in the provisional, or what the president sometimes called interim, thank you, Janine. That's why we love you, you know that, right?
Of course.
What the president calls an interim government, and some individuals got together and put together what they called a permanent government. And lawfully, it was put together. The Congress got together and ruled that we are a provisional or interim government. The representatives of all the people from the states came together, and they put out information regarding that. Number two, the one Supreme Court in the Oregon decision did have a little bit of information in the original opinion that stated something about permanent versus provisional. They correctly went back and struck from the record the reference to the permanent versus provisional in the Utah decision. And then number three, this
Oregon
petition
decision.
Or complaint. Yes, in Oregon's decision. Then number three, Georgia brought their complaint to the one Supreme Court. It was served properly on the three individuals that were named in there, and we don't know the current status of that. Perhaps Supreme Court Justice Nathan Peachey will have a little bit more information on that. But that's everything I've got to report tonight, Robert. I will stand by for questions, sir.
Very good. Thank you, Rick. Well, speaking of Nathan Peachey, Nathan, are you on the call? And if you are, sir, welcome, Mr. Chief Justice.
Good evening, Robert and Rick and Janine and everybody else. Glad to be on the call again. If you have just a couple minutes, I have just a few things that I wanted to bring up to date. We had our weekly justice call on Tuesday evening. I was absent on a few of them the last couple of weeks because I was out in Idaho, but I'm back in business again. The topic on Tuesday evening pretty much centered around our website and how we're going to be communicating and integrating business. And I understand there's a web committee or some group somewhere, I'm not sure who they are, one of the justices is actually involved. I think Rick Rios is actually involved with it. And they were putting together or planning to put together or in the process of putting together, and they were kind of wondering how much integration there should be with the one Supreme Court or the Republic District Court website and the sign up people and everything else. So we kind of came to the conclusion that there really shouldn't be any integration at all, that the district courts and the one Supreme Court should be completely separated from any other website process or sign up process, as that is quite independent and we wouldn't want to be involved in that in any way. There is two cases that lies before the court right now. One of the cases is Georgia versus Paul Davis, and then there's two other defendants, I think. I'm not sure if I can. Ron Hawkins, I guess, and maybe. We will be posting these two cases as soon as the website portal is open and ready for us doing that, which it will be very shortly. We believe that everything should be open and transparent to the American people. I don't believe that they want anything else.
I'm sorry, not sure why that is, Nathan. Just go ahead. We got technical difficulties going on.
So as soon as the website portal is ready and operating, we will be posting those cases onto the One Supreme Court website. The other case that has come before the court that we discussed on Tuesday evening was, and I was looking for the case, the heading, the name of the heading, and I couldn't find it here on my immediate laptop. I have it back home in my office. But it has to do with petitioning the Supreme Court to make a, or to give an opinion or a statement on the subject or the nature of prayer in when conducting official public business. So it is a very, very interesting case, and it's definitely going to require a lot of prayer to come to a proper answer if we are going to look at it. But it does lie before the court. So those are the two immediate cases that lie before the court and will be up available for public display and on the docket, court docket, as soon as the system is operating. And we are not going to be using the other systems and integrating with that. We believe we should be completely private and should be operated independently for the sake of the good of all.
Chief Justice Peachey, who are the
yes.
who are the plaintiffs or the defendants in the prayer case?
You know, Rick, maybe you could answer that question. I apologize for not knowing. I just don't have that in front of me. That's why I don't know.
I missed the question, Robert. Will you ask it again?
Yes, I asked Chief Justice Peachey what who the plaintiffs were or who the defendants are in the prayer case that's before the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry, Nathan. I don't have it in front of me either. I can't remember, but I do remember you talking about it and seeing a copy. I don't have it. I'll look for it and see if I can bring it up, but I don't have it handy, sir.
Right. It's an interesting case. I don't think there was a plaintiff. There was a petitioner involved, but there wasn't necessarily a defendant, necessarily like in a lawsuit. It was just it was put to the court for an opinion, for a statement on the issue. So I guess we're going to get to that when we're going to be opening it up on the court docket. But I don't believe we're going to be doing any more cases till everything is open and transparent and on the public docket of the court. So we're working on that, on the technical side of it, of everything right now.
Very
and
good.
It'll be done very shortly. And the next subject, the last subject, I didn't want to miss this. We just now are starting to look at doing our first case removal to the either a Republic District Court or the one Supreme Court. I've done a lot of research the last 3 months, 4 months, and I've just come to the point now where I believe that we can actually start doing that, and to think that we'll probably have enforcement beside that very, very shortly as well. So I'm very excited to start drafting our first removal case into the Republic District or the Supreme Court from the de facto courts. And I have a couple cases that I know that people are being sued or taken by the de facto, and that I'm looking for a couple of very, very good cases that I can wrap my arms around and make a very, very good solid case to remove it. So it's going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be
Nathan,
some time.
Nathan,
to put
if
it
you
together.
Don't mind.
Yes.
Nathan, if you don't mind, would you back up a little bit? I'm sure a lot of the audience will be confused. They don't even have a clue what a removal is. Could you give them a little background on that?
Oh, okay. Well, the subject of a removal is basically, let's say defendant A has a case against him in a court, in a de facto court. And another court notifies that court and requests and demands removal from that court because the defendant has petitioned another court of higher jurisdiction to remove that case. And right now what we're doing, we actually have about 22 cases right now that we're working on in removing them from the de facto to the ecclesiastical courts. And it is very, very simple. In Corinthians, chapter 1, chapter 16, 1 Corinthians, chapter 16. Somebody help me out with that. I don't have it memorized. You know, Paul writes about not going into the secular courts. And also in, I believe it was 1987, public law, Congress, now this was the de facto Congress, but, you know, we can always use their laws against them. They recognized and attested the Bible as to be the Word of God. That was back in 1987, Public Law 92 something. And so the way we're doing that is we're doing it just like the Mohammedans are doing with their Sharia law in courts, you know, removing the cases into their courts. We're also learning that we can do the same thing. And by and large, you know, the New Testament does say that we shouldn't go into the secular courts. Paul prohibits it and complains about it. So it now becomes a religious issue. And so if they don't remove it to an ecclesiastical court, now you can actually go into their courts and file a constitutional or federal lawsuit for violating civil rights. So that's how we're operating it right now. And so learning that process from the judge in how he's doing that, I've learned what I needed to know, how to also start doing it and removing them into the Republic District Courts or the one Supreme Court, because we can do it the same way. It would be just using a little different words. But I'm very, very excited in doing that. And there's a couple cases out there in UL Republic land and that I'm looking at, and I'll be calling a few of you one of these days and going to be asked if you would want to do that. But there's some of you that are struggling and hurting real bad out there, and we are going to help you. But as usual, before I embark on something, I have to absolutely be correct and be able to argue from A to Z and be right. So that's where we're at with that.
Nathan, one last thing. If you would explain to the audience, a little bit about what a ecclesiastical court is, but the decision by the de facto corporation Supreme Court, 9-0. Would you just talk on that just a second? I think they'll understand the authority of what you're doing that way.
Okay, that was in Hosanna Tabor. Is that 9-0?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, in that case, the Supreme Court actually upheld in Hosanna Tabor that the church ruling of a church court was superior and actually would hold, okay? In other words, it wouldn't be overturned because it had to do with church matters and it had to do with two individuals in the same church. Now, here's where you got to understand. An ecclesiastical court is not a church court, okay? An ecclesiastical court deals with the laws of God. And there again, it kind of leads into the Holy Bible. There's been an interesting controversy going on in our republic about the Holy Bible and removing the wording Holy Bible or leaving it in. The problem with removing it, and I'm not saying it's a big problem. I mean, it could be either way. But I think we'd kind of be shooting ourselves in the foot if we absolutely, would remove it because it could be to our advantage, okay? Now, the Bible is probably the only book, and if you want to call it a religious book, some people don't. I call it a relationship book because, I'm not a religious person at all. I have a relationship with God. I don't have a religion with God. So the Bible, whether you call it a religion or relationship book, it's up to you. But bottom line about the Holy Bible is if you attest to or uphold a higher law than what man wants to dominate you with, you have a much better chance of winning and being successful. The moment that you take away the recognition of God's laws and a higher supreme power, divine being, the first thing that happens is the people that want to take away God and the Holy Bible, the first thing they want to do is they want to be your God, okay? And that's what we usually see happen almost all the time throughout history, and that is why there is such an interesting debate going on. I don't know if everybody realizes it or not, but if you take away the reference of the Holy Bible, and you can do that, it'll work out fine, but it usually comes down to the fact that somewhere along the line, some human being is going to want to be your God. So it's very important that we acknowledge a higher being, God who he is, so that a human being doesn't do that to us. And that's, of course, tyranny and dictatorship. Did I answer your question, Rick, or did I go off on a tangent?
No, you actually did great. And then I'd like Robert to do what he usually does. I want him to summarize what he understood from that so that he can understand where you and I are going. So that was fine, unless you've got something else. Robert does a very good job of summarizing.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to summarize right now. I'm going to challenge. I heard you say that removing him to a higher court is something that the Muslim faith is already doing. And that alarms the heavens out of me. If what I hear you say is that the Muslims can go ahead like they did in New York and the guy murders his wife, the TV guy murders his wife, then takes the case to a higher court, a Muslim court for Sharia law, and he gets off scot-free because that's okay in their religion.
Okay.
That astounds me that can actually be considered a higher law than the wretched, mixed-up de facto law that we have.
Well, do you want to talk just a minute about that? You brought a very interesting point.
Yes.
In the Constitution, the Constitution allows religious freedom. It prohibits laws for or against the establishment of religion. And so if our religion is to not go into a secular court, that's how we're removing cases into an ecclesiastical court, okay, which makes sense. Now, let's talk about the Mohammedans. Could they do the same thing? Well, that's exactly what they're doing with Sharia law, and they're getting by with it. And some of the American people are alarmed, but I'm understanding perfectly what we're doing. Shame on us that we haven't been doing that for over 100 years. We should have been also doing that. And now back to your statement about murdering, and this is again where the Constitution falls into play. This is again important, where it's very important for us to identify who we are. You know, we are a free man on the land, okay? And in the old writings of the original Republic, they gave us plenty of evidence that we are sovereigns, that we are the sovereigns, that we are the ultimate men on the land, free men and women, but they also classify it as citizens, okay? So when you understand that, and you read the Citizenship Act of 1802, the Naturalization Act, you clearly see that in order to even be a citizen of the United States of America, you had to be the sovereign. You could not even qualify to be a citizen of the United States of America unless you renounced, reneged, and severed yourself from any sovereign power or any slavery or any state of being a subject to of anything. You had to be the ultimate sovereign, or you wouldn't qualify to become a citizen, if you read this Naturalization Act. So, as a citizen of the United States, that was we might as well admit that in the Republic, a new type of citizenship was born, and that was the sovereigns as citizens. So, going back to what you suggested about the Sharia law being upheld underneath the Constitution, even in killing, well, if you read the Constitution, it prohibits the people, and it mandates criminal cases from being moved into the United States courts. So if a case is criminal, you cannot have it settled by the common law courts or the people, which would be the Sharia law.
Very good. So what I hear you say on the other side is, and being asked to summarize this, I think there's a clarity issue, at least in my own, what I'm hearing you say, is I think if we don't have, which we do have as the fundamentals as the Holy Bible and the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and Declaration of Independence as their founding documents, you open the door to the final authority, if you open this door to an ecclesiastical court to be anything that a person determines to be a religion, that if it violates God's law and man's law, from how we know it through the Judeo-Christian tradition, which is what our country was founded on, then it is, you know, if you try to take the Bible out of that thread, I think, I mean, this is my opinion, I think it's just not where we're going. It's not where I'm going.
Well,
I'm sorry. You know, I serve a living God, and there's plenty of people who don't and who mutter and peep and go on. That's fine. God has many forms.
Let me back up on your statement, Robert, here, that you made. You made a very, very important statement that I want to address. If we use the Holy Bible as our law for, okay, then cases of murder or other issues could be moved into the ecclesiastical court because they are covered in the Holy Bible. They are covered quite well how to deal with that under God's law. If we take away the Holy Bible, we're basically shooting ourselves into the foot, because now we don't really have now we're going to have to resort back to man's law and mob rule. Do you understand what I'm
well
saying?
Well said. Well, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Yeah. So I think it's a pretty slippery slope for us to think that we can eliminate the Bible because it's politically correct in 2012. I think it would be disastrous.
Well, we are going to lose. We're going to lose a lot of freedom, and we're going to lose a lot of opportunities to gain our country back if we don't use it and if we don't openly recognize it. Okay.
I agree. I totally agree.
Gentlemen,
you know what, guys? We're
Janine.
Moving along here. Oh, I was.
I'm sorry, Robert. I was just going to say we have 19 minutes for questions and answers, and this is such a lofty subject, and I hate to interrupt, but we do have a time constraint here. So if you don't mind, with Justice Peachy, I am going to turn this over to Q&A.
Oh, okay.
And we've got a lot more to cover on this, but we do it in little bites here on this,
little
on this
bit.
Program.
Exactly.
So, our first question is on came from last week. We have about five on the in the questions. We have more than that in the questions. The come to questions at the Republic. The first one is from Chris. He says, "I have a question I'd like answered on the Republic roundtable call. I became a member of the Republic in November of 2010. Since that time, I've moved three times. The first two times, I was still within the county and state where I had filled out my original paperwork. This last move, however, brought me to Washington. Suffice it to say that I am a very mobile person. I would like someone to address the implications of moving to different counties and states within the Republic. Can I retain my original Oregon Republic membership, or do I have to fill out a new free state paperwork every time I move? And what about the county level once these assemblies are up and running? If I want to keep my allegiance to the free state of Oregon, does this mean that I can vote within that state? Or can I vote within the Washington State Assembly now that I have relocated here? I would appreciate any clarity that you can provide in this issue. Thank you for your great work in the Republic." Okay,
and
who would like
I'd
to take
like
that?
To say Chris is a female, by the way. And
what,
she,
Chris is a female? Oh.
Yes, and
okay.
She works very hard on IT stuff, not for just Oregon, but for national as well. And
very
we
good.
Appreciate her very much. Thank you.
Well, this is Speaker Lounsbury. I guess I can address it. Right now, that's a great question. I don't know that it has been very well discussed in Congress, if at all. And we need to address that issue as far as moving and what the results would be. There probably will have to be some sort of a transition period where you maintain just like they do in the current system, where you maintain a certain residency or domicile until a certain process has taken place in that new location. I would think that you're probably going to have to go through some kind of a process in order to transfer that official citizenship from one state to another, because we can't maintain multiple citizenships in multiple states and vote in multiple states. So it's a great question, and I'm going to actually pose that to the Immigration and Naturalization Committee this coming Saturday, and we will discuss it.
Very good. Anyone else like to weigh in on it? Okay, our next question is, I was reading the history on the website, and it seems to be out of date. I thought I remember the Chief Justices said that Congress in the 1860s had a quorum and that the executive order were given to President Lincoln through the power of Congress. Would somebody like to clarify this for Dave?
Nathan, we found that on our research. Do you have the answer to that? Are you still here?
I'm listening. I didn't hear a question. You just making a statement, which I agreed with.
You agree with his statement?
Yes,
so
yes. I believe his statement is correct, yes. If you read the statutes at large and go through all the acts of Congress, you'll find that Congress gave a lot of approval to Lincoln for his executive orders, and they did have a quorum according to the Constitution to do business.
Okay. So then we need to update the history on our website from the sounds of it.
Yes, and so, a lot of other education in between, yes.
Very good. So, Rick Weiner, who would that get transferred to? Would that go to you or Rick Rios or Kelby? Or
shoot it to me. Rios doesn't have a very good schedule for being able to respond. If you get it to me, then I can get the answer at like 2 a.m. in the morning when he finally answers me and get it back to him.
Okay, you now have it. Janine, let's take the first caller in the queue, and then I'll bring another question off the Internet in a minute.
Thank you, Robert. The first question in the queue is from Robert in Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Robert,
you have the floor.
Yes. Thank
Good evening.
You. I've been unable to send email to any email address in the Republic for the United States. They are being bounced by Comcast, not deliverable. And I'm wondering if it's because the mailboxes are full or because Comcast is blocking any mailing going to Republic of the United States.
Robert, I'll check that right now while we are talking here and report back to you if it's system-wide or localized.
Right, and if it does happen to be Comcast, then we should take action against Comcast or blocking us from sending emails to the Republic.
Right. Sometimes it. I've had very good luck with querying them as to what the problem was, and what they do is sometimes someone's email is hacked. So, like I said, I've started an investigative report on it right now. If I can find out while we're still on the line, I'll report back to you. But you're right. This is something that I look into almost on a daily basis. So thanks for the heads up.
Okay. One other question or statement. You requested that anyone with ID scan a copy of our existing ID and send it to you. And that's when I discovered that I couldn't email it to you at Republic Records Bureau, and it got bounced. But I also tried Skype with Janine, and if Janine were to look in her Skype history,
I got it today, Robert, and I wanted to know, I've been traveling home and getting myself reorganized over the last couple of days, and I noticed that you've called me, and I will call you back, and I did receive your Skype message.
Yeah, very good. I just wanted to make sure you got the ID that I included. Yeah, I uploaded the documents through Skype.
And I did receive it. Thank you.
And while
Thank
we're
you very
on
much.
Subject, just so that everybody understands, we're not in a position for all of those scans to come in right now. If I maybe misspoke or made people understand the other night when I was on the call, that is what we are planning on doing. When people ask me, what about us that already had IDs? We do want to rebuild the database on all of those that had those IDs, but we're not quite ready to do that. At the same time that we start rolling out the new IDs is when we'll be in a position to take all of those scans in. And, Robert, what I'm looking at right now is Comcast has a policy that anything over they actually state on their website 12 megabytes, but that usually means more like 10 megabytes. So if your scan was above 10 megabytes, they'll automatically reject them to anybody you send them to.
Okay,
so that
very good.
May be the problem.
Okay. I yield.
Thank you.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
Our next question comes from Mike off the Internet. I have been trying to listen to all the conference calls in hopes of learning more about the progress of the Republic. I've been involved with battling the beast for so long that I have so much hope in the success of the Republic. To think that we could really have an opportunity to have true liberty and justice and honest courts, etc. There is no other hope outside the Republic to restore freedom. I am a member of the Free State of Arkansas and a Supreme Court Justice. Like so many, I'm looking forward to when the Republic will become internationally recognized and the people will truly be free from the de facto. Question would be, is there any idea when this would come about? The national. So, would somebody like to address that question?
This is Speaker Lounsbury.
I was waiting for you, Mark. Go ahead. I don't want to jump on it. Go ahead.
I had to take myself off mute. Well, we are hoping that that is in process right now and will be relatively soon, within the first quarter of this year, hopefully. Maybe for sure, probably within the first, the next 3 or 4 months, as things are progressing and as we anticipate. Again, there's no guarantees. This is bigger than us. International recognition is not dependent upon specifically what we do, but there are some things that we can do and are doing to help facilitate that. And one of those is to document our existence and our re-inhabitation of the governments of the states in getting a quorum. And over the past several months, that has been coming together very well, and I believe we're very close, if not already there, at 34 states, which would be the minimum quorum. We'd like to have more as we go and present the documentation and the, enter into some of those discussions with key leaders around the world. And I would suspect that all of this is going to sort of take place at the same time, both our acquisition of some funding, some funds available for us to begin to implement some other aspects of the Republic that are important, such as Ranger Program and Congress getting together and in person and various other aspects that will even lend more credibility to the other nations. And then as we meet with those other nations and they see the documentation and they see that we're continuing on and we're able to pass through a lot of the trials and tribulations that we have over the last couple of years and still going strong, still growing, still very much involved in bringing all the, this together, both from a congressional standpoint and judicial standpoint and the executive branches, it is becoming more and more evident to us and the rest of the world, and we're receiving more and more comments from key people around the world that they are very delighted in what is happening and that they are very much ready to acknowledge it as all the pieces of the puzzle come together in a way that they can do that formally and not just behind the scenes, but formally to the rest of the world. And I believe that it's very soon, as the president has shared as well, and it's exciting.
So, Speaker Lounsbury, how does this connect with the presentation of the documentation to The Hague?
Well, all of that will be done in due time, in due process. We obviously have various steps as far as getting the right people in the right places to deliver that to The Hague. There are those out there that would not like us to deliver that to The Hague. And so we have to have the right connections and the right relationships, the right understandings with key people so that we can get that into there at the right time and at the right placement. And I do believe that some of it has to do with just making sure that we've got all our ducks in a row when we enter that, because when we do enter that into The Hague, it is an indicator for the rest of the world that we are not only have an intent, but that we are here. And so we want to make sure that we are here and that it's documented and that the rest of the world's ready to jump on that and embrace that. Because if you, let's say you put it into The Hague and we weren't quite ready yet and people weren't ready to jump on it, then, and you went for 6 months before they were, you know, that could be sort of a weirdness during that time. And we don't want that to happen. So I just suspect that that's going to happen all simultaneously with all of these other pieces of the puzzle that are coming together at the same time.
Thank you, Speaker. Next question has to do with a website. It doesn't seem that it's being updated with the most current information. When this person talks to people about the Republic, it'd be nice to be able to direct them to a site where they could get more current information. Is there another website that has more current information, not necessarily replays of former conference calls?
The answer to that, I'll take that one, because Janine and I are pretty much in charge of that. it just happens to be that we have so few volunteers that have the time to do things like keep the websites updated. We know that once we have the funding, we actually have the budgets put aside to where we have people that would literally do that on a daily basis, including we had tried for a short time, Robert. Remember, we had actually a Facebook link that anything that was popped onto the Republic website automatically hit all these different people on the Facebook, which worked very well, but it was extremely time-consuming and labor-intensive. And so we actually have to get to the point where we can pay somebody to stay on top of that 24/7 to do that. So we apologize that the information is not as current as we'd like it to be, but the limitation of the number of people that can spend a lot of time away from their real jobs and get things done is our only limitation right now.
Well, there's another whole angle that is available to everybody, and that is that each free state has a website, and there is some tremendous information on the websites by the different free states. So I encourage you to follow those links to check out some of what goes on there. And the other one is called Republic SG, SG for Study Guide. The governor of Oregon has a tremendous site there. He's got a latest updates link that has a lot of programs on it and a wealth of research.
Give the whole website. You just said Republic SG. They need a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Dot info.
There you
Republic
go.
SG so, dot info.
Right.
And
Robert?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Mark Lounsbury. Also, the Congress has a separate website, republiccongress.org. And there is a public tab there which contains a lot of information, notices, legislation passed, current, reports from committees, news, various different things that is posted there and beginning to post there, and we're beginning to add more and more things to that as well.
Very good.
Right. And, and what you might tell them, one last thing, Robert, what you might tell them, and you talked about going to those websites. I believe what you're saying is go to the RUSA website or the Republic of the United States of America website, go under Republic Contacts, look under State Contacts, and there is where you'll find those websites. Is that what you're indicating?
They are updated. Correct.
Right, the state's websites that are updated. And we stay on those pretty well and pretty quickly. So that is one area we try and stay on. So for everybody that's listening, that's what Robert's talking about, is if you want to go to this plethora of information from the state of free states' websites, that's the quickest place to go to them because they have their websites posted there. Thanks, Robert.
And Robert, this is Janine. This might be a good opportunity, a good segue for a plug for next week's call. Next week, Representative Brad Luchek from Arizona has agreed to come on our call and answer questions about keeping the state's websites dynamic, and also how to stream assembly meetings and using technology. And he is prepared to stay with us the entire call if we need to answer questions. So all of you out there that are working on your state websites, or if you need information on how to get started in the first place, please be on the call and have your questions ready because Brad will be here for us. And, Robert, with that, I'm going to go to the next caller in the queue if you don't mind.
Yes, that's fine. I want to give a couple of comments while that caller is coming on. The first one's from Monty. He says, Robert, ask for the names or we're no better than de facto. And that's regarding those in the Senate Ethics Committee violations.
Will the flag and the seal need to have trademarks?
Oh, I had – who's this? I'm sorry. I had unmuted you because you're the next caller. Could you identify yourself, please?
Chuck Bennett, representative from Nebraska.
Oh, great, Chuck.
I was just wanting to ask if the flag and the seal will have to have trademarks.
That would be a Senate or representative caller. Mark, are you here?
I'm here.
I believe
I'm here.
Will.
Is there a procedure or a protocol that you've lined out for it, gentlemen?
Well, we have not yet, because obviously the trademark in the de facto would be different than trademark within the Republic, and we haven't really addressed or created a division or anyone to deal with trademarks and copyrights and that sort of thing within the Republic yet, but absolutely those things are going to have to be dealt with. And
Robert, aren't you the Secretary of Commerce? Does that not fall under your cabinet?
I believe it does. Well,
boy, that was
certainly copyright does.
So when's that going to be done?
Let's get together.
I'm not sure that a trademark is necessary for a non-commercial entity such as the Republic, because that's what's different about the corporation is they are a commercial entity. We are a government. The government can claim something. We are the people. And I don't know. We'll have to look into that, but I'm not sure that the trademarks and the copyrights are appropriate for a non-commercial entity, but it might be.
No, I think you're right, House Speaker Lounsbury. There is some research that Nathan and I happened across in all of this stuff that he's done. At some point, we pray that we can get this into like a database, because I remember specifically on running across something having to do with exactly what you're speaking of. There's a huge difference between a copyright having to do with a commercial basis versus what governments do and what is therefore recognized on an international basis. It actually falls into system having to do with passports and everything else. So you guys are on the right track here, but you're also right, we don't have enough information to answer the gentleman's question.
All right, our next question is a quick question here. It's a frustration and a quick question. I'm from the Oklahoma Free State. I have signed the DSR and other documents. I was told that if I did not sign the new ASR, that I could not participate in any elections, and I would not have any say in anything. Is this true? I want to participate, but it seems that I have two different sides telling me what I have to do. I thought the Republic is the people, and the people had the rights and the voice, and the officials were to listen.
Absolutely. The answer, the question was kind of long. Break it up into pieces and let me answer it categorically.
I've signed the DSR and other documents. I was told if I don't sign the ASR, I won't be able to participate in any elections, and I won't have a say in anything. Is this true?
That is incorrect on every state except for Oklahoma and Georgia, who had a problem with two distinct governors, two distinct governments operating there. As a matter of fact, what we did is contacted Congress and said, here is a major problem here. We know that you guys are working on the proper documentation due to immigration, and the president and I needed a temporary solution for those two states because they had fragmented to the point where they had removals, they had resignations, they had nation states, they had people that had fallen away because of the controversies, not knowing what to do. So only in those two states did we have this problem because they had two distinct separate groups. All the other 48 states are not having the problem that we know of, and so no, that is not required for you to do at this time. Now, if I understand what Congress is telling the president and I, they are putting together very carefully a good document in the form of an affidavit that clearly lays out our law form so that everybody understands that. Because one of the major things that we did early on, which was, again, a disservice to the people, is we did not lay out a Declaration of Sovereign Rights to the people that so that they could understand our law form. So was there a second part to that question, Robert?
No, but actually, because you've said it that way, I think it's fair to this writer to give you the rest of her comments here. Even though it's a state-specific issue, I think it's fair given just where we are here. So I'll just read it to you, and then you can comment if you don't mind. I thought the Republic is the people, and the people have a right and a voice, and the officials were to listen. I have read many emails from what is called officials and am totally upset and disappointed now as to what is going on. It appears to me that the officials, both sides, are acting like the government, the de facto, that we know now. They either appointed themselves in or was elected in, and then power took control of them, and they are not listening to the people. I have read the Oklahoma 1907 Organic Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, the joint resolutions, and I personally have worked for 28 years for the state of Oklahoma, and also with the federal government, and all those so-called officials are acting unlawful according to those constitution and laws and guidelines provided by them. I feel that Oklahoma needs to stop all officials and tell them that they are out and let new individuals step in via voting of the people that want to be lawful. I also have been in several assemblies in Oklahoma and have seen that the members / people of Oklahoma really sit like bumps on a lot, as they really do have a choice as the officials take control of everything. So I understand.
Robert,
yes,
this is Speaker Lounsbury. I can add to that. Mm-hmm. In Oklahoma, the people actually did speak, and that was the tool that was presented to them for them to actually resolve their own problems. And so the people came together and decided that that's what they wanted to do, was to utilize that ASR to distinguish those that were truly wanted to be a part of the republic and those that had other agendas. And all those that were willing to do that, they decided as an assembly, as the people, to do that. In fact, I also heard directly from the president that many of those chose to step aside as republic officials and sign the DSR, and they were going to hold new elections. And Rick can confirm that if a little bit later. Secondly, any ASR that is voted on by Congress that does become law and is required by all the people to sign to be a part of the republic or to make that distinction there would be of the people, because Congress is the voice of the people. So it is the people then making that decision to utilize that as a tool in this republic. So, and Rick, can you confirm that about the Oklahoma elections, upcoming elections?
Well, it has to be taken in stages. Number one, you're exactly right. The president took your draft form and put it into a form that the people in Oklahoma could use, simply because of what we discussed earlier. There were resignations, nation states, several things that have interfered, and the people wanted a clear method to identify themselves that they wanted to stand behind the law form as we stated it. So that part is exactly correct. Number two, they felt like that they needed to get this done within a short period of time. However, the president cautioned them that because of communications, not everybody has emails, that they need to carefully find all of the people in Oklahoma and give them that same ability to do what you're talking about, to clearly say, yes, I am not resigned, I am active, I am supplementing my DSR with this, so that we can clearly tell here in Oklahoma what's going on and give the people time to digest this. And so you're probably right. They may be headed for elections, and you're right. Many people did step down from their quote-unquote elected positions to allow that to happen. But it's one of those dynamics that are going to take a little bit of time. And again, if there's something that any of the people know of that has been a disservice to the rest of the people, they need to continue through the one Supreme Court, Republican form of government, and bring that up so that they can be taken care of in a lawful manner. So that was the only thing, caveat, I needed to add. If there's things out there that we don't know about, the president and I didn't come in to make any kind of decision. We only came in because the president is under oath to give a Republican form of government to each and every individual and state. And so it's a long process, Mark, and I think you'll agree with me.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. And I think she understands that and has a really good finishing comment on here. She says, I understand that General National gives us guidelines as to what is needed for Oklahoma to be ceded / recognized. but does General National know what is in the Oklahoma Constitution? I have a book of the history of the Oklahoma Constitution, makings and ratification, and nowhere is there any de facto in it until further down the road. There is some dated stuff, but that is fixable. So it seems like it's an interplay. It's that's right. The national has a responsibility to provide a Republican form of government, and the state has a challenge to go back in their history and find out what their people have birthed and resolved, and work the two together.
One wrong word there, Robert. We will not provide them with it. We guarantee that we will ensure that they do have a Republican form of government. But it falls again by Constitution to the people. So in other words, the president and I could only go there and could only supply solutions and point out there's the one Supreme Court judicial branch, there's the legislative branch, and if they need to remove an official and they don't have anything in that Constitution, they will have to do exactly like Oregon did, exactly like Georgia did, and they will have to get their people, their representatives together, and do by Constitution, by lawful means, a removal or a receding or any of those kind of things. So I just want you to make sure that we don't accidentally put a word in there where it sounds like we're going to go do something.
Thank you. I stand corrected. You've articulated it beautifully. Janine, you want to take the next caller in the queue?
Thank you, Robert. This caller is 314 area code, Judith. Go ahead, Judith. You have the floor. Could be someone besides Judith. 314 area code. You're unmuted. I'm hearing some noise coming from your phone. Can you hear us? Okay, I'm going to put them back on mute, Robert, and I'll come back to them later. And we're going to go to 907 area code. Go ahead, caller. You have the floor.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. This is Representative John Ward in Alaska.
Hi there.
I'd like to ask, what is the situation relative to the military of this land? This should not be a questionable situation, since it could place many good people in jeopardy, especially in conjunction to the so-called National Defense Authorization Act. The people deserve a very clear comprehension of these matters. As we have all heard, I think, hazards can be found in the word assume. I wait for your response.
Could I have your question clarified? You want to know where the military fits in our republic at this moment, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we have had... I should clarify that. The president has had discussion with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We have found that they are pretty much split. Part of them are still working on the de facto mentality. Part of them are understanding the republic form of government, and they are standing by waiting until they see that we do have our funding and do have our particular government running either parallel, or if the other government falls completely, then for us to take over. So simply, they are on the fence, just like literally many of the people right now, waiting for us to get through to the funding situation, because as you know, the military has to have funding, and they are very worried about the situation with the Federal Reserve and the de facto corporation, because they themselves have their people throughout the world that have seen that their paycheck is in jeopardy. So we have to continue forward, sir, and once the funding is in place and the military has the means to continue to protect the people under Constitution, we feel that they will.
Mr. Weiner, I would like for you, I think you're fairly close to the president and anyone else of authority on the national level. I would like for you to get a firm answer from the military that we at this time and in the future would not be subject to the Military Defense Authorization Act in terms of terrorism. So we know what our status is in that regard.
Very good, sir. I've written that question down, and I will bring it up the very next time we meet with them.
As soon as possible, hopefully.
Yes, sir. As soon as time, the military, and God allows us, I certainly will, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Robert, I'm going to go to our caller that we couldn't get in. They've called back in, 314 area code.
Hello.
Let me unmute you. I think we can hear you now. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Yeah, apparently this is phones listed to my wife. This is Congressman David Mueller. The question that I had from Missouri, the question that I had asked that was mentioned earlier to Mr. Peachy, it was more than just a statement regarding that Congress gives the president the authority to give executive orders and that he had a quorum during the Civil War to do so. My actual question was also including the question, who gave President Lincoln the power to make executive order number one, putting us under martial law and allowing him to create the corporation and then bring Congress back under as a CEO's authority, being sub-corporate players, and then approving every other executive order they're following. I was wanting to know who gave him the authority to make the first one, putting us under martial law and running as the country as the commander-in-chief. Did Congress give him the authority for executive order number one? And I yield the floor.
Thank you, David. Chief Justice Peachy, are you still on the call?
Yes, I'm still on the call. My belief you did, David, I would have to go back and carefully research your specific question to executive order number one before I would be able to conclusively say yes. But my research through studying those very troubled years, actually, has provided me with very sufficient data to fully back up with the way that I'm teaching it and explaining it to people. But your specific question, I will certainly do a little bit more research and come back to you on that.
Thank you, sir.
Robert,
I appreciate that.
Robert, would you mind forwarding that to Nathan so that he and I have it? And we will. We'll dig into our research for that. I think it would be a very appropriate question for us to put in with all our other Q&As that we're going to try and publish soon.
Yeah, I don't see where it had the same name on the question, so I'll have to dig for that.
Sir, could you go ahead and re-email it to Robert so that he can get it to us?
That would be helpful.
To R. Smith at Republic Congress?
No, at questions at the Republic.
Questions at republiccongress.org?
No. Well, I don't know. So did you send it to Congress or did you send it to questions at the Republic of the United States?
I think I sent it to questions, I believe.
Well, send
it
to
somebody else.
If you send it to questions, I'm looking for it, and we'll forward that over to Rick and Nathan.
Questions at Republic Congress?
No, questions at the Republic of the United States.org. All right, before we go to the next one in your queue, Janine, I have another email question that has been here since Tuesday. I have begun to hear some strange points of view recently on the roundtable calls and on some of the other calls I have had the privilege to listen to. Some views originally I felt were similar to mine, but on closer listening made me drop back 10 yards and punt. Thus my question above, whose republic is this anyway? I am recently awakened, DSR forwarded, citizen of my free state of North Carolina and the republic for which it stands. I have read the documents that taught me how the treasonous Lincoln administration usurped our nation and put us on a road to slavery. However, in all my research, I fail to come up with one reference that shows that I and my family ever living any on other piece of land except the great United States of America. We may have been deluded into believing we were actually U.S. citizens instead of American citizens, but we were never anywhere else but the good old terra firma United States landmass. That is, except when my job as a soldier for this nation required me and my family to temporarily to be temporarily in foreign lands. So please explain to me and my 330 million American citizen brothers, can't be asked to fill out special papers to claim the heritage we already possess. My spouse and my children already are Americans. Why? He's got a lot more from there, but let's just take that part of it here, if we can, ladies and gentlemen.
I'd like to start. This is Rick. I'd like to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that Mark and Jeff can add to this, but number one, the gentleman needs to understand his right to contract. And unfortunately, what he has possibly missed in his research, and I can't answer this for sure. Hopefully he'll send us a question again to clarify. But in his right to contract, he accidentally or unknowingly contracted his ability to be exactly what he's talking about. He contracted into a de facto corporation, and they literally stripped him of his ability to claim that he is a good old-time American. Now, the nice caveat about it is we have discovered that it's been sitting there this whole time waiting for us to come back and literally reclaim or re-inhabit those rights. And so, therefore, there are all sorts of legal and lawful means to do that, which is exactly what we're doing. That's what the DSR and the ASR is going to do. It's going to clearly show to any other government and to this government that's here in our corporate government that we are, again, reclaiming our rights, God-given, that we have had on this land all this time. We just didn't know how to defend them. I yield.
Okay, he goes on a little bit further, and perhaps he's getting it in part here. He goes, why, the instance we awaken to the knowledge that the federal government is a fictitious foreign corporation, we became free. We return to the land, and as we begin notifying the corporation that we are not also fictitious entities with all caps for names, how then can anyone assume on their self-indulgent personas to ask that we again swear our allegiance to a land that we loved and served for more years than some of the current crop of suited commerce gurus that have been aware of their trades. This is our land too. This republic is not a club or an Amway multi-level marketing organization. This is our home. When we begin to feel more secure, we will all probably find our place and join local groups to rebuild this reoccupied nation. Then some sort of oaths of office and agreements of jurisdiction will be great. He goes on more. So anyone else want to take another comment at this before? I can't read it all. We just don't have the time, Ron. Perhaps you could be more succinct in if you want to pursue this on a following week's call.
I would Robert, I would enjoy just giving a short answer to that, if I could.
Please
comment.
Go ahead.
Many people get offended and get sidetracked on the fact about signing a document or paperwork. And they have a good point. Aren't we all born here in America, and is it not sufficient to just say it and pronounce it and move on? Why do we need paperwork? Well, that's correct. So let's say that we would all together unanimously rise up tomorrow morning together and just somehow all be connected and we would just go down and we'd take our country back. Then it wouldn't take paperwork. Of course we could do that. Paperwork is not the highest form of us telling the world what it is. It is only an expression of form. It is only expressing that what is in lieu of us having the ability to work together without, it would be practically impossible for us to do that without divine intervention. So paperwork is just it's just an alternative way of becoming united because, people, you get 20 or 30 people in a room, they start having discussions and arguments, and they soon become divided again. So paperwork is just a way to record the expression of who you are and of filing it into the record so it stays there. you know, while we go through the arguments and the meetings and stuff.
Well, you know, I wonder, too, if part of it is it's an education process. You know, when folks come from other countries and come to America and want to become American, there's a process of understanding what the fundamental principles of freedom are. And in America, 90+ percent of Americans have no earthly idea of what the roots of freedom are for our nation and for our individual, for each individual person. And so if we don't have some doorway that people pass through, some education process, some, I don't mean it to sound like a club, but some induction process where you have some measurable idea, some measurable way of saying, okay, you have been totally dunked in the mud of the de facto. Yeah, you want to come out of it. Wonderful. Well, let's first of all get a hose and get some of that mud off you. And that happens through some degree of understanding who you are. And that documentation gives some reference point that you can say, oh, yeah, I see what type of an American I am. I'm not a slave to a corporation. I am a free American on the land.
Before we were invaded, just the fact that we lived here and had, you know, maybe owned a house or a farm here in America was enough of evidence that we were an American. But, you know, we've become invaded. So that's why paperwork is important. If it wouldn't be for the invasion, we wouldn't have to have paperwork.
Well, thank you so much, Ronald, for your writings. I'm going to ask if you want to pursue this further, if you would do it a little more brief so that I can cover it on a future call. Janine, do we have anyone else left in the queue?
I do have one caller left in the queue from California. Go ahead, caller. You have
summary.
The floor.
Janine, can I give him one little summary before we get off of that?
Sure.
Okay. Everybody needs to understand that the corporation assumes you gave up your rights. So we must go back by declaration or affirmation of our intents and beliefs, and we have to do that by paperwork, also known as identification. And it's an unfortunate thing because the man's right. We have had those rights and have always had those rights, but unfortunately, we were educated out of those rights. So that's the summary. Assumption has to be overcome with intent by identification, and I yield.
Yeah, affidavit, so keen. All right, caller from 949, good evening. 949-735.
Good evening.
There you go. Hi. You were with us? You're not any longer. Hello.
Go ahead, 949. Robert, I believe they've dropped off. If they come back in quickly, because we are at 8 o'clock Pacific time, we'll bring them into call. Do you have any others on the email?
I think that's all I want to cover for now. I did not hear an answer with regards Monty's comment about the Senate Ethics Committee, which says, Robert, ask for names or we're no better than de facto. Can somebody comment on that, please?
I can. As a matter of fact, as I mentioned, that investigation is ongoing. It would be inappropriate, I believe, at this time to put anyone's name out there because I think we want to believe that everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Is that standard practice in the de facto government that when ethic violations come up that they don't become public until they have gone through the inquiry process?
I believe so, but I'm not as familiar with their processes. I mean, I've heard that all my life, but you know, I've heard so many things that were not true all my life that I'm not part of their world, so I don't want to comment on their world.
Well, I'm going to give you an analogy here. I was on my way to work one day. The guy next to me dropped dead at the wheel of his vehicle. I put mine in park, went out into the intersection, stopped his truck with a couple of other guys, ended up having to
smash his back window out, give him, resuscitation before the fire and ambulance came. Anyway, so they beat on him for 15 minutes, no pulse, no nothing. So the ambulance took off. I had given my details to the police officer on the scene. 2 hours later, and I was bummed. I'm like, boy, you know, what was this all about? 2 hours later, the policeman calls me and says, oh, Robert, I just want to let you know that the guy at the incident was able to be resuscitated at the hospital. I was totally ecstatic about it. I was, oh, this is great. I didn't think to ask the cop which hospital he went to. Perhaps I also didn't mention that I sat at the feet of this guy and I prayed for him. And I asked that God's hand move in his life and that God be glorified if this guy was to be brought back to life. So I wanted to follow up with this guy. I wanted to go see him at the hospital, whatever else. I didn't ask that policeman. And when I called the fire department and I called the hospitals, because of this new law that's in called HEPA, nobody could talk to me. Nobody could tell me anything about this guy or where he was or confirm that he was where he was or anything. So I say all that and I give that story to say sometimes all this stuff that's supposed to be protecting the innocent is a bunch of hogwash. And I'm not saying that that's true about where it is here with the inquiry and stuff. I'm just aware that it's clear that we do all we can to be above board and open and let the people hear the good and the bad of what's going on in the Republic so that there's healthy discussion, healthy dialogue, and we don't get into any smatterings of cronyism or, you know, an elite group trying to drive the bus and stuff like that. So perhaps you could comment now in that vein.
I read the document primarily for that very reason, Robert, to be open above board. I've personally found it very difficult.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
However, it's something that I think we have to be and to do as a new republic to do the best we can to be as honest as we can.
Well, very good. I'm sure that more discussions will go on in the halls of Congress, and that's what we have for now.
Thank you,
right,
Robert. We do have one more caller in the queue. 605 area code. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, this is Jerry Adrian from South Dakota. I have a question for Nathan. I am working with Naveen out of Utah, and we put documents into the court system and into the clerk of courts on a property that was stolen from us, from me, my wife, and the U.S. Supreme Court, it was in there for 4 months, and as I was in Arizona, they turned it back over to the state, and the judge signed, and they evicted us from the retreat center that I built 27 years ago. And they moved in, and I have a pastor in the house at this time, and today they called and said he has to move next Friday. And we put the documents in, and the clerk of court said the judge has to approve this before we're going to accept it. So what do I do with a situation like that, Nathan?
Nathan, I wonder if I could just preempt you to say, is this something that could be handled offline, and is it of value to talk about it on an open call?
Sure.
I'll just give a brief answer to the question. We certainly would have to talk about it offline. But the bottom line is, I'm not sure what your name is, that you probably have to do a suit under your constitutional rights to have a case removed into an ecclesiastical court based on your religious beliefs. So that's probably how it has to be taken care of. It's going to take some more energy and time for that to do, so we need to certainly communicate offline about that, how to do that.
Okay. We did talk to Naveen, is it? And he sent me all the documents, and we presented them, and we got it into the ecclesiastical court. But they haven't approved it yet. And am I right that they have 21 days to answer to that?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the documents and see what all
okay.
is involved. So just pop me an email over, and we'll
okay.
Talk about that. AmericanJusticeGate@yahoo.com.
Okay, thank you. I yield.
Very good. So we have one last one, which is more of a contact information. So we talked about Georgia earlier. This email comes says that I spoke with Tim Turner a few days back and on many topics, one of which was concerning a couple of folks in Georgia. Tim mentioned them as a contact in Georgia Free State. I've been trying to get in touch with them, but I have not yet got a response. Could you please give me more information on who do I contact in this republic? So do we have on the website accurate and updated contact information for the folks in Georgia now?
We should have accurate information, but they can always send an email to rrb.admin@republicoftheunitedstates.org, and we will get that their information to the correct person.
I'll forward you this email then, Janine.
Thank you.
Very good.
I think they just sent us their information. In other words, they are just recovering from their situation, so I'm not quite sure whether we have 100% confirmed information, but we are in contact with Governor Alan Wright, and we can make sure it'll get there, Robert, just so you know.
Okay, so it's Little Joe is the email, if you'll look out for that. Hello, I hope you're
okay.
reading this. It'll be in the subject
yep,
line.
Will do.
All right.
Robert,
well,
there's one last call.
Oh, all right. Well, coming under the wire.
Coming in under the wire.
And it's actually
California?
The same guy. Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead,
caller. Hi, caller.
Good evening. This is Representative Forrest Clark for the Free State of Kansas.
Hi, Forrest.
I have a question for Mark Lounsbury. Is Mark still on the phone?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, fantastic. I have a concern. From the last couple calls that I've heard, my comprehension is that the House doesn't actually have a set of rules that we're running by. That's something that we did in Kansas immediately. We basically did a short form of Robert's rules, and then we added gentlemen's rules, meaning that we just have open forum and we could have conversation openly as long as we were respectful with each other. And considering that the House of Representatives, to my knowledge, doesn't have any rules in place, are the different things that we've done in the House actually binding and lawful since we don't have rules in place? And I yield with that.
Thank you, Forrest. Speaker Lounsbury.
Thank you, Forrest. Yes, in Utah, we did adopt the gentleman's rules, which means that you raise your hand if you want to speak. And the Constitution is very clear that each house may create any kind of rules that they seem necessary to affect the effective legislation that they want to deal with. But there's nothing in the Constitution that states you have to have a certain number of rules or, you know, anything in particular that would make something unconstitutional. And so far, everything that's been running through Congress, everyone's been agreeable to the process that has been taking place of working through committees. And so there are, in fact, acknowledged procedures that we are operating under, and there is also a rules committee that will be addressing, especially now that we're looking at coming together in person, that will be addressing perhaps some additional things that might be able to be brought before the floor and addressed. And all I can say is that I don't know that there's any rules that we could have put into place right now that we've only passed four things so far in Congress that would have made it any more, any better as far as getting through some of the legislation that we've gone through than what we currently have. So there's nothing unconstitutional about what we're doing right now.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. God bless you all.
Thank you, Forrest. Thank you all who've been on the panel tonight. I appreciate your time and your dedication to building the Republic. As we close tonight, I'd like to invite, if I can find you, Bruce Dietler. Saw you, and then you disappeared. Oh, there you are. Bruce, would you be so good as to close us in a word of prayer?
Thank you. Father, we thank you for this time together tonight. Father, I thank you that you are the builder of this kingdom, your kingdom, Father. Lord, we just choose to yield unto you and ask you, Lord, to knit our hearts together as one. Father, that we might work as you would direct, that you might be fully glorified. We thank you for the leadership you have brought together, Father, for the leadership you are bringing together, for the clear vision you are placing before us. Father, we thank you that you make a way even where there seems to be no way. And Father God, you brought us this far to bring us through to the conclusion, Father, that would glorify you. We rest in your love and faithfulness. We thank you for all that you've done, what you are doing, what you yet shall do in and through your people. And we rest in that right now. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you all again. God bless you. Have a great week. Look forward with expectancy. This is a very exciting time. Things are changing before our eyes. And expect to have powerful changes in and around your world. Stay centered, get plenty of rest, and know that you're an instrument for the good Lord. Janine, let's close out. I think you have God Bless America. Is that right?
That's right. Thank you. Good night,
good night,
everyone.
All.
Stand beside